by environmental groups to address industries they say harm the planet, health, and workers. Executive Director of the Indigenous Environmental Network, Tom Goldtooth, says the group has been working since the 1990s after seeing a lack of consultation on issues relating to Indian country.
There is no one watching the shop as far as advising tribal leadership on environmental protection and environmental health issues, those issues that are very critical to state governments where they have environmental infrastructure, but why was it in Indian country to where that wasn't even adequately addressed? So that was a time when I got involved by a lot of the communities that came together on this environmental justice issue, which was a lot of grassroots people.
Goldtooth says the group hopes to develop a toolkit and curriculum to be used by schools on different issues impacting Indian country. He says cuts to federal funding has awakened many tribal leaders.
I think it's a very timely topic, a very timely issue with the change in climate. And we really don't know where America is going in the next 50 years. Capitalism, those of us that have really have studied and looked at capitalism, and if capitalism fails, the whole economic system fails, where are we going to be at as indigenous, as tribal nations and our communities?
The conference is also focusing on missing and murdered indigenous women and food sovereignty. It continues through Friday. Principal Chief of the Cherokee Nation, Chuck Hoskin Jr., says his tribe is seeking the support of Indian country as the tribe asserts its treaty right to have a delegate in the United States Congress. The Oklahoma tribe is early in the process, but Hoskin says it's a key issue, not just for the Cherokee Nation, but all tribes.
If the United States breaks its promise to one of us, it's broken its promise to all of us. And if the United States will keep its word under any treaty, then I think we're all stronger for it.
That's the message Hoskin is sharing this week at the National Congress of American Indians Annual Convention taking place in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Treaties are not just something that is in some old history book, that they are still the supreme law of the land. You know, when I talk to our people back home, or as I spoke with the delegates just a few moments ago, the government of the United States imposed this treaty on our people and caused great injury to the Cherokee people, removed us across the country. But it is a sense of justice, I think, today that we look back in that treaty and find a provision in the interest of the Cherokee people that allows us to have a voice in the Congress and more broadly allows Indian country to have another ally.
Hoskin was sworn into office in August. He nominated Kim Teehee to be the tribe's first delegate. Hoskin made the comments Tuesday during a live broadcast of the radio program Native America Calling at the National Congress of American Indians Convention. Attendees at the National Congress of American Indians Convention wore the color red Tuesday to call on policymakers to address public safety and violence against Native women. Advocates, tribal leaders, and Native organizations are seeking the reauthorization of the Violence Against Women Act, which includes provisions for Indian country. Other issues being examined this week include climate change, youth, health care, and many other topics. It's also an election year as tribal leaders vie for NCAI president. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, October 23rd, 2019. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories and tips at 503-231-8032. The producer for tonight's newscast is Annette Newell, and our engineer is Althea Billings. The director of Evening News is also Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Michelle Coppola.
And I'm Annette Newell. Stay tuned for Culture in Motion coming up next.
Good evening. You are tuned in once again to Culture in Motion, the twice monthly show about news dealing with art, culture, politics, social movements, and so on. I'm your host, Mike Crenshaw, and tonight I have a very special guest by the name of Hector Guerrero. Hector, how are you doing, bro?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm good, man.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah,
I really appreciate that opportunity.
So we met at an event last year correct? That's a school out
there.
Yeah,
that's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
When I saw you.
I'm trying to remember the name of the school. My good friend Susie Bartley teaches out there. What school was that?
Yeah, it is a school, Bridger, where my daughter, is going to. It's an immersion school. She's in the program of Spanish immersion. So it's when I met you for the first time.
Right on, Hector. And Hector, I invited you down. You reached out to me because you actually invited me first to an event that's happening November 2nd. And tell the people, tell the listeners and me a little bit about that event.
Okay, so this event is taking place on a venue that I work for my business. I do catering, and the reason that I'm making this event is to celebrate the Dia de los Muertos. It's a celebration that takes place on November 2nd at this venue.
Okay, so Dia de los Muertos. So some people will call that in English. They would say the Day of the Dead, right?
Correct.
Okay, so the significance of this holiday, I think a lot of us in the United States have learned about it through maybe movies or through actual, like, cultural appropriation, where we see people that aren't actually of Mexican descent, like, wearing the face makeup and so on and so forth. So for those of us who might not be informed about the holiday, can you tell us what the significance of the holiday?
Okay, so basically, we have to talk about the pre-Hispanic scene at this event.
Okay.
So it comes from the pre-Hispanic scene clearly, and it's been changing a lot. So what we can see today is that we are using elements that in the past they were using it as a rituals and in a different way than now we are using it. The definition of this will be it's a way to celebrate our loved ones who have died. Mm-hmm. We have to, in Mexico, when you do this type of events or celebration or say holiday, we cook dishes that our loved ones love in honor to their memories. You can see in the ofrendas and is the altar, you can see flowers, you can see dishes that they used to love. Also, we put some drinks that they must love, even cigarettes. So anything that these people used to love or they were, on their lives, on their daily lives. Also, music is involved. So basically, it's a way to gather all families and friends to celebrate death and also life at the same time.
Man, that's beautiful, and I think it's really important for us to take moments to be present with the memories, you know, to honor, respect, and celebrate those that have came before us, you know, as far as our ancestors. So this, you said this is a pre-Hispanic, like pre-Columbian, pre-colonial holiday, and is this something that is celebrated through multiple different indigenous ethnic groups in Mexico?
Exactly, yes. Definitely, in the past, what I can tell right now is that all these offers that are on the altar, it has a significance, right? So in the indigenous traditions or legends, the history, they used to do candles to guide their spirits to go through basically it's for lighting, to light their paths, to travel into their journey. So they do the candles to help them to go from what we know as hell to heaven. So they used to be lighting, it was a dark way journey, so they have to have the candles on. Also, it's another tradition that we do, we start incense or copal or some fragrance flowers like marigold that we can bring them that day, the Day of los Muertos, to open that window, to connect with them. So this way is about the incense, about the lighting, about the food. So we believe that they are here with us that day in specific, and now it's been changing a lot, you know, like with the Spanish, when the Spanish came and they start seeing us as animals. They mm-hmm. thought that it was brutal having on their altars like a real skulls.
Wow.
So they, and the offers, they have real hard on clay pots with amaranth on it, on their on their ofrendas. And then Spanish people were like, no, this is not correct.
Mm-hmm.
They start taking it as a paganism.
Mm-hmm.
And these people, they were like forced to change all these type of things. And for another good thing, so now we can see some symbols as the bread, the pan de muerto. There's this in a specific shape. It's a sweet bread that people made on memory of that dish where actually was the heart with blood and the amaranth. We have also the skulls that are now made of sugar
mm-hmm.
Instead of having the real skull. So all these things have been changing for a new world. So also the Day of the Dead now is celebrated on November 1st and 2nd.
Okay.
In the past, it used to be celebrating on the Aztec calendar. It was more close to the end of the summer.
Okay.
So also the Aztec, it was a celebration about the people who has died on the fields, on the war fields.
Right.
As in their honor, they made all these beautiful ofrendas, and also they from their crops. That means that in the end of the season, they also offer some of their food, as you know, corn, beans, and zucchinis, okay. Some calabaza, and stuff like that.
Wow. So, like, what I'm because often what I've wondered is, you know, when I see Halloween, October 31st,
mm-hmm.
right? And then just a couple of days later, there's Dia de los Muertos. And so I was always wondering what the significance and the intersections might have been between the systems of belief that are celebrating the end of summer, okay, going into the harvest time in the fall, which is often significant when people think about the transition from a time of light and going into a time of darkness as the days get shorter. And so I do see similarities between these older European animist beliefs that created, you know, the celebration of what we would call Samhain or Samhain or Halloween, right?
Yeah.
And the dead, Dia de los Muertos. So this is something, and then you said, I always thought about the sugar skulls.
Yes.
So the sugar skulls were created as a way to calm down the Spanish fear of the real actual like skulls.
Yes, and also I will. It's a good time to say to loosen it up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
When you see people using masks, for me it's fun
yeah.
to see it. It is
right.
it is you see some really good creations out there. It's very handy people in Mexico who carve their mask. And then maybe that's the association with Halloween. So just to point it out, it's like the Dia de los Muertos, it is not a costume party.
Right.
It's more to bring those old traditions to the table and to have the respect. So
mm-hmm.
people should be aware of that.
Okay.
So then it's not a costume party. It's
mm-hmm.
not to, and also we have to just keep the respect for
yeah.
the indigenous traditions
right.
and their beliefs, right? Because if we go in terms of, I don't believe in that, I don't believe what is after we die and we are nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to just be more open and respect other people's traditions and be, point of view, because, yeah, it's been, it's our heritage. And now, I don't remember if it's, I think, 2008,
mm-hmm.
so where Mexico accepted us the heritage on the world, you know, for the human heritage.
So there was even so there was a significant thing where Mexico recognized that this was this holiday was significant as a cultural contribution to humanity. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's exactly.
Okay. So, and I'm glad because I wanted to ask you about the line between appreciation and appropriation. And I think a lot of times in Western culture, people appropriate symbols that aren't necessarily from their culture, and in doing so, it can be disrespectful. So when you see people dressing up and mimicking the sugar skull face makeup and so on, does that feel, I mean, what would you say to people who say, I want to dress up like that for Halloween? You said it's not a costume party, so
yeah.
How do you navigate that?
Okay, so for me, I'm like more open-minded, and I respect other people's freedom.
Right.
I think this is all about this. We are in the moment that everyone is looking for this freedom. But I have the other definition is how do you call it? Like with the like to be unite with our community, being more like identified. I know
solidarity.
No. Anyway, so when you see people walking on the street, and this was my point, is that in the past, the people who used to wear the mask, it was because after the celebration, after the ritual, the shaman, the leader of the celebration, the gathering, wears a mask in order to scare off the bad spirits.
Right.
So he wants to bring them back. Because you open the window, once you open the circle for the ofrenda and bring your spirits, your loved ones to celebrate with you, you want them to go back to that space. So the shaman used the mask in order to scare them.
Okay.
So that maybe from there start getting a little bit weird here and there. And now people is using masks as just for fun. And I would like to say that I prefer that, people having fun with respect, of course, than people who doesn't care about this celebration.
Right.
Who people who is not happy, who doesn't want to look for more and be open for something new. So honestly, on my case, I think also like the calavera that we all know, the skull lady who danced La Catrina, it was a famous artist on the 19th century, like in the 60s. So he was a printer, and then he designed that skeleton, and all his prints are based on skeletons and skulls, so they are pretty fun. He's a very amazing artist. It's Posada is his name.
Posada.
And Guadalupe Posada, yeah. And this guy brings a new spirit to the new world. So now we are identifying like the what he wants to express with the skulls dancing, and La Catrina is she's dressing like a fancy dress, is like a fancy woman. So I think he was trying to make fun of not even wealthy can take it from that, you know.
Right, right.
So it was his artist point.
So he Posada kind of made the iconography, kind of almost branded it with his aesthetic, and that's what we recognize globally now as the symbols of the Day of the Dead.
Yes.
This is Katrina and those sugar skulls that look like that. Man, so thank you for coming down and talking to us about the celebration. Now, there's a celebration you're having.
Yes.
November 2nd.
November 2nd.
And it's going to feature the food from your catering company.
Exactly.
Okay, so tell us more about that.
Okay, so the name of our company is a project that I've been working for the past 10 years. Since I moved from Mexico to here, and living in Mexico actually is when I started doing all these type of events, catering, cooking demonstrations, mezcal tastings, and now when I moved to the States, I wanna bring that to you and for friends, family in general. I want people to know more about our culture, and I think it's a good moment to share this with all of you who live here in Portland, or they are here in the States, wherever you are. Like we are always trying to help with knowledge and food and just having a good time as a family.
So this is an opportunity for cultural exchange, for learning, for celebrating, for you know, getting familiar with people, maybe even making new friends, and celebrating with food. What are some of the foods? You said mezcal tasting. Is there going to be mezcal tasting at this event?
And this event is not allowed. Liquor is not allowed.
Okay.
So I'll make some coffee. We call it café de olla. We'll make some pozole. We want to make some flautas con chile pasilla. We'll make some little things here and there. So some surprises out of there.
All right.
We have pozole for sure. That's the main for big parties in Mexico. And also, like I said, some tacos dorados con chile pasilla and dulces mexicanos, Mexican candies, traditional Mexican candies.
Dope. And it's all ages, so families are welcome. And for all the vegan listeners, is there going to be vegan?
Oh, yeah, there? All the time. Yeah, I have always that option. Uh-huh. We have vegan pozole, and also we have the tacos are vegan. So basically, yes, mostly vegan.
And I think you invited me down and maybe share a song, so I'm looking forward to do a song in remembrance of my ancestors and our ancestors, too. So there will be some music as well as food.
Yeah, there's going to be music. It's going to be great artists sharing their talents out there. So this is exactly what we wanted to create. We want to incorporate new elements to this celebration in order to make it more like the contemporary scene on Dia de los Muertos as art.
Okay.
And music and performance, and it's all about sharing. We'll be creating our altar,
mm-hmm.
and yeah, so you are welcome. You can check the link. The name of our business is called Chupa Rosa Supper Club.
Okay.
And the link will be there. So yes, please come and join us. And by the way, Mike, I have 5 tickets. Okay. The event is almost sold out.
Okay.
But I have 5 tickets. So what is the best way to?
So I think you mentioned the company. The name of it is Chupa Rosa. So we have Chupa Rosa, CHUPARROSA.com. And there's a mailing list on the website. Would it be possible for people to join the mailing list to get the tickets from you? Or would you like people to email you?
Yeah, they can just check it on the, they can email me, or even if it's easier for the, on the website, they can do that.
Okay.
But what about if, it would be cool, I have a little, in order to get the 5 tickets, it's one per person, mm-hmm. what about the people who answer a question, the people who can get the ticket?
The people who answer the
questions. I have a little question here.
Okay. So
and then, so that's the code to get the ticket. What about if we make it a little more fun?
Okay, so look. I think right now the best way for them to do that is to let's put people in touch with us.
Okay.
At our email address, right? So you can email Hector at
Hector Guerrerosma at gmail.com. So it is HECTORGUERROSMA at gmail.com.
And so before we come up with the question that people have to answer, where is the location and what is the time?
Yeah, the location is on Stark, 811 is the number, and that is the name of the building. It's Encore Studios, and it's going to be 6 p.m. till 10
on November 2nd. Okay, so
November 2nd.
What's the question that people need to answer to get those tickets?
So I was thinking, what is the name of this torta with a tamal on it? Mm. It's a torta, tamale torta. What is the name of that torta?
You got that? And is it going to, if we come to the event, are those tortas going to be there?
We'll make it happen, for sure.
That's what's up, man. So, Hector, you're from Mexico. You've been living in Portland, but you lived all around the United States. And we were talking a little bit earlier about, you know, your freedom of movement that you're able to have between the two places, and that's significant. I often feel lucky because I have freedom of movement. You know, I get to travel a lot as part of my work. And what I do, what do you think is something significant about that freedom of movement that gives you perspective that one of us might not have if we're just like living here in the United States or folks who don't get to travel?
Okay, so I think I feel very lucky about that situation, because every time that I go to my country, I just come back here like super inspired of things that I want to show someone. I wanna always share with someone. And I found the best way to do it now is through food. People okay. love food. We love food. We have to eat. And if we eat something new, it is something just beautiful about learning about the where it comes from, how it's served, what is the new flavor in your mouth, or even more that some of the dishes that we are eating, we don't even know about. This is being created for the pre-Hispanic scene, you know, like the tortilla. The tortilla is a symbol of the Mexican cuisine, super old, and also the methods and they experiment to do that is in order to make it more easy, more tasty, and with more more nutritional way to eat the tortilla, right? So, and the way then they discover that, it's just it's amazing how these civilizations that they were here before this world that we are living on, it's like from the 16th centuries when they when the Spanish people came here and they started looking at all the objects and tools that they were using and all the architecture that they were that they built or their design, they were thinking that it's been more than 300 or 400 years ago, all the civilization. So I'm pretty amazed of those aspects of my culture. So like I say, yeah, I feel lucky to go back and forth and experiment that world and bring it here, just trying to make something with that those elements.
Here's a question I have. Flour tortillas versus corn tortillas, okay? So I prefer corn tortillas. The only way I really want to eat a flour tortilla is if it's kind of fried and crispy or whatever. But is were flour tortillas also pre-Hispanic?
No.
Okay.
So the wheat, it was brought by the Spanish people, Europe, Europeans. They brought wheat, they brought cows, they brought pigs. So in Mexico, basically, our in our daily, in our diets, it was mostly vegetables. It was a lot of beans, a lot of zucchinis, and flowers. It was a lot of chia, corn. We have a lot of vegetables like roots, as yuca. Yuca was there, you know, and all these. And this side, we didn't have any lactose until these people came, and then anything fried as well. So basically, what they did is when they come here and they were traveling, they brought lard, and now it's one of the main dishes and everything that is fried in Mexico. We use lard for everything. So yeah, no wheat, no rice, and a lot of other vegetables, and they were integrated on our food.
What about, so I understand that chili is from America. So y'all used chili before the Spaniards came.
Yeah.
Okay, and then what about garlic?
No garlic.
No garlic.
No garlic, no onions, no cilantro, no.
Wow.
So yeah, all these are new elements, what makes our food like richer and richer and richer. Some other people think that our food, it was just good as it was, and of course it was healthier. The way that we cook on clay, we cook under the pit, under the ground, we make a fire pit, we use a lot of ashes and wood, different techniques that it is from that time. But now, there's nothing wrong with trying new techniques, and it's all about that trade. So the tamal is delicious because we add a lot of lard on it, and it just adds a different flavor and consistency to the masa. The cream, you know, sour cream, and some of our dishes are essential. Cochinita pibil, and it's the pig, like kind of like a pulled pork type, and all those chiles and oils now that makes your food taste much better.
So I'm gonna say that there has been cultural exchange going on for many hundreds of years, and it's influenced things. When I you know, and then there's different power dynamics at play, you know, between exchange and appropriation, right? You know, it's like who has the power in the situation, in the relationship, and how is that power used, and how do we adopt and share and exchange ideas that help enrich our cultures. Without an oppressive relationship, without an oppressive dynamic going on. And I think that's one of the things we get to look at when we look at the difference between appreciation and appropriation. We've been having this conversation with friends lately about the chili pepper and how it's spread around in the many different cuisines. But, you know, history is going to tell you that it was the Portuguese that took the chili pepper from the Americas and took it all around the world. And we were also talking about, me and my comrade Kim, who also teaches at Alliance, frying, you know, and how frying is a significant part of different cuisines all over the world. But again, the Europeans taking the pig places and taking lard as the first means of frying is a question that I'm not really clear on that, but I'm grateful for it. So let's just say thanks to the Europeans, not for all the oppression, but, you know, for all the things that basically give us diabetes. But we enjoy it in our diets. So once again, Hector, thank you for coming down. And to remind the people again the address and the date and the time of the celebration.
Okay, so then the name of the place is Uncork Studios, and that is on Stark, 811. And please, yeah, just get some tickets now. We are almost sold out, and I hope to see you there. The name of our business is Chupa Rosa Supper Club, so you can find us out there and see more information on our website or on the Instagram.
And people could possibly book you for catering an event, yeah?
Yes, in the future, for sure. I would love to meet, like, all these beautiful people who's around, like, now interested about new cultures and diversity.
That's what's up, man. Thank you for coming down. You've been listening to Culture in Motion with Mike Crenshaw, and thank you for tuning in to KBOO Community Radio. One love, y'all.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Muertos PDX Dia de los Muertos celebration on Friday, November 1st, and Saturday, November 2nd, from 4 to 9 p.m. at St. Andrew Catholic Church in Portland. This two-day event celebrates the ancient tradition of welcoming back loved ones who have passed on. There will be altar building, Muertos face painting, sugar skull decorating, traditional Mexican food, drink, and live musical performances. It's a benefit for Transiciones, a program at Mount Hood Community College that has helped Latino women for close to 20 years in reaching their academic and career goals. Again, that's the Muertos PDX Dia de los Muertos celebration on Friday, November 1st and Saturday, November 2nd from 4 to 9 p.m. at St. Andrew Catholic Church, 806 Northeast Alberta Street,